Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are Ace Up Science here to make things make sense.
Today we are talking about alcoholism. We're going to explain why this outdated term might mean that we all are one. We're also going to explain what alcohol does to your body, what happens when you quit alcohol, and just essentially talk about something I think we all need to be talking about in the culture that loves to drink.
As we are going to start drinking after this.
It's the weekend, okay? Don't be so harsh on us.
I'm so excited to talk about this. It's so interesting. And like even that, what you just said, is like justification of an alcohol use disorder.
Hi. Sorry, I feel like I'm not comfortable and I don't know what's happening. And I'm just like, where do I sit? I don't have everything ready.
Wow. You look good.
I feel that I'm always disheveled.
Yeah, you are always disheveled.
It's like I didn't check before we hit record and I'm like, this cord is bothering me and I'm okay.
Disheveled is such a good word.
Okay, but it's actually mean when you say it.
No, wait, is it a bad word? No, it's not a bad word.
No, like, but it's more like there's nothing nice about calling someone disheveled.
And also like where the hell, what's the etymology of that word? Like de-shovel makes sense to me if you didn't shovel, but disheveled. Anyways, well, we don't know the answer, so we're going to move on.
We're science people, not English people.
So what's up? Anything else? Should we just get into it? Or like anything going on in the world?
I don't know. What's going on in the world?
I'm just watching Sopranos. Oh, we did Halloween.
Oh,
I know
Halloween.
It's like a little bit late.
Oh, true.
But
I
you
don't
came
know.
Through and you thought well ahead and you enjoyed.
And I saw people from the pod who were like, I could not understand Greg's or was so excited about Greg's costume after hearing it on the pod and finally get to see it. And half of them being like, I get it now. And the other half being like, it's so funny to see. Which... Craig probably won't want to tell you because he's modest and didn't want to brag, but that costume went viral. I was all over the internet.
Fergie doing flips on the Today Show, so you can imagine why I did not think that it was going to go viral, as they say. But it was so interesting that it like struck a chord with so many people. Well, I'm like, Fergie doing flips on the Today Show? Like
even the Today Show shared it, which I guess isn't like so surprising because
it was
like,
a gay intern at the Today Show for sure.
Yeah. And then your tweet had like 100,000 likes or something like that.
Yeah, and it had 10,000 retweets.
Yeah, crazy.
Which is crazy because
from your measly little Twitter, Whale Watch Me PLZ.
My Whale Watch Me PLZ. Very catchy titled Twitter. Like, I feel like it's very weird because that's such a niche cultural thing. Mm-hmm. So I am actually like to this day, like sometimes like I woke up the next day almost and was like,
was that like a dream? Because we also drank and yeah. like it happened while I was drinking and like eating edibles.
You mean was like wearing it a dream?
No, was the response that so many people
posted it earlier.
Because it was just yeah. it was just a Halloween costume. And honestly, I didn't like try it on until
that day.
The day I just threw it on. And also because it was like putting a mask over my head to like essentially I was upside down Fergie. I didn't see it. Like I just like heard yours and Mark, my friend's reactions.
Yeah.
So I didn't ever really see
you
the
like,
costume
couldn't, like, see it as
until I saw the photo. And then I was like, oh, that does kind of look no, like an upside down person. But then really,
it's like an illusion because I think a lot of people see it and they think you're actually doing a flip. And then they realize that those are feet on the ground. And then it becomes like even better.
So it's interesting because it's like,
it would not have been nearly, it would still be funny, but not half as good if you were actually upside down.
I just have something really important to say, which is that
oh my God.
We have an episode on massages from 2 weeks ago. And I said, during a massage, I use it as a time to think, okay? So
okay, go get more massages.
While getting a massage, I was like, no, I guess I should probably think.
Broke the internet.
What am I going to be for Halloween? And I was like, Mitch should be Jeff Probst and put tape on his face to have Botox, which I'm sorry. I think that would have gone viral too. Your yeah, costume was
like,
amazing.
I still want to get on that show and I don't want him to see that one day.
I knew there was a reason why I didn't do it because I'm like, that's a great costume.
And he's not the kind of person who could laugh at that, I don't think.
Yes, he is. Jeff Probst
not
is iconic.
Botox.
Oh, true. Okay. Like, no.
He'd be happy I wore the costume.
The work is obvious. Sometimes his head just comes in for a measly millisecond on some of those challenges, and it's just like, that face is a lot different than all the other people's.
Jeff, love you. You look great if you ever
stumble upon this pod. But he can laugh at it. I think he can laugh at it.
He's been doing it a long time.
My point is, I think he can laugh at it. It's so obvious. It's funny.
But I don't think anyone can laugh at their plastic surgery. Okay. I'm sorry. I just don't think.
It's just Botox and filler. That's not plastic surgery.
Sure. I don't know.
Also, I get why there had to be a reason why you weren't doing it. Because you want to get on Survivor. You're worried it'll decrease it. Anyways, I thought of my costume. I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, pants as hands and like bare feet as like literally just like purple sweater. Okay, that's good enough. While getting a massage, goes so viral, keeps my thesis up. Massages, the only time without your phone, if you think deeply, things will happen.
Think about what you could achieve
if
without
you got
your phone.
Without my phone. Exactly. The only reason I get massages is because it's the only time I can't be on my phone.
You have an untapped resource. It's like, I don't use my phone a lot. I can't achieve much more. I'm at my peak. This is all I have to offer. You, on the other hand, have a lot. No, I'm kidding. I use my phone a lot.
No, it's also more than that. It's that I think so quickly that it's a problem. Like, say I want to do a TikTok. I'm like, oh, quick. And I just do it. Whereas it's like, there's something about a massage that is like the music and everything that it allows your neurons to really fire slowly and you can think deeply. You're good at that without a massage. You can think deeply all the time.
Yeah, it's actually a curse. It's not actually a good thing.
No, that's why this is a podcast between two very different people.
I cannot get over how there's just like sunlight blazing. Like you look like a... It's so funny.
Jesus loves me, this I know.
It's because God has blessed me. Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
You go first.
Speaking of things that aren't good for people who have anxiety, I'm going to bring this to you because if I got to learn something that's going to give me more anxiety, so do you. But not that you have it, but I mean the listener.
You're about to ruin people's day?
Maybe because it's not ruin their day, but let me ask you a question, Gregory. How often do you think people are thinking of you?
Well, right now with the sun shining on me the way it is in this really absurd way, I think to myself, God is blessing me currently. And they think of me daily all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm totally kidding. I think this is a amazing question. How often anyone thinking about me?
Yeah. And like, you know, if you like ruminate and think about situations like being with friends, like how often do you think they're thinking
about
you?
Can you actually just ask me the question one more time?
How often do you think other people are thinking of you?
Oh my God, I actually hate this question. It's making me feel really weird.
You don't have to give like a quantitative.
In general, of any person thinking about me, it's weird though because we make YouTube videos. Does that count if they're watching it? Are they thinking about me?
No, I mean...
Outside of that.
Think about the people you actually interact with and then the people you think about.
I'd say like maybe one person every 2 days. I hope.
Oh my God.
I hope.
So, hate to break it to you. I don't have like a number I'm bringing to the
table. Oh. I thought this was a science study of how many people top and people think of me. I was so excited. I was like, is it every day?
Let me explain it to you. So, there's a lot of common phrases that reassure people like, stop. People think they're the center of the universe, but it's like no one is thinking about you, right? Like yeah. That's often common advice, especially for anxious people, is like no one cares about you. You're on the subway. No one's looking at you. No one thinks about you. Like whatever.
I so don't have anxiety. It gives me anxiety to think no one cares about me.
Okay, we're the opposite. Because I like love thinking about that because it like lets me get out of my head.
I have my own anxieties.
Anyway, so trigger warning. Studies found they did 8 experiments on thousands of people. And we actually underestimate the frequency which with other people are thinking about us.
Oh, that's
and it's
hot.
Actually called the thought gap. So a lot of people are aware, like, they might rethink of times they hung out with friends or their trips or a conversation they had with someone, but they often would underestimate how much that person would think about that thing.
Wait, I love this. I love thinking that we underestimate how much people are actually thinking about us. I'm like, hot, I'm famous. Right?
I mean, they're not just going like, Greg, but they might be going
like, fuck Greg.
Or like, remember when Greg said that thing, or suddenly I'm thinking of that trip I was on and Greg was there. And like, but we often like insularly think, I'm just randomly thinking about these people. They're not like thinking about me. But they actually found that it was more often than not. To separate the difference, though, because there are anxious people like me who's like, no, I always think not that people are thinking about me, but I have this anxiety. And so there actually was a separation between when we're self-conscious about something, we think others notice it more likely.
Oh, that's important.
And that's called the spotlight effect. But if you're going about your everyday lives, most people are not thinking about that and think other people aren't thinking about them when they might be. So that's actually kind of nice in some ways. They're not thinking about the things that make you anxious. They're just like probably generally coming into their mind more often than you think.
The spotlight effect is so interesting because I totally can relate to that. Whenever you get insecure about something,
relive it over and over and over and over.
Not even that. Like when you're in the moment insecure about something, one of the first things that I think about is how everyone else is going to be thinking about this forever or something. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
it's like you do something like and you're
the
like
study maybe saying they will.
But no.
That's the part that gives me anxiety.
No, the study's literally saying that it's not. It's like when you're self-conscious, you overestimate how often people are like, I'm saying the spotlight effect specifically. Totally, I overestimate. Like, not the rest of the study. That's
got
different.
It.
Like,
got
I'm like,
it.
I did something embarrassing. Everyone saw. And then sometimes people start talking after normally. And I'm like, did they actually like not even notice? And like, they probably didn't.
Yeah.
But you're like you're oh, so the thing I said head. Was so stupid or like embarrassing or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, to round this out, it's just this thought gap gets bigger as time passes. So if you just saw a friend today at lunch and you thought about that, you'd be like, oh, maybe they like thought about that lunch together as well. But the longer time goes on, the more you think they don't think about it, even if you think about it. And it's not true.
Interesting.
Well, what did you learn this week?
Okay, mine is so different, but was, you know, the New Yorker, which is my personal Bible. So a lot of these things are just me. But today I did something epic, which was I'd read the whole New Yorker before the magazine even came on Tuesday.
Wait, pause. I feel like we're going really fast. Like, let's slow down.
Okay.
The other day we were talking about how fast we talk, and I'm like,
I can't believe anyone listens to this. I can't believe it's possible.
Okay, so I just in that moment, down. Like, was not trying to, I've heard myself as well and was like,
we both talk fast. That's the thing that sucks. There's not like a mediator.
And I think we like,
okay.
Rile each other up.
So you read I don't the know, New Yorker. Now that I'm slowing down, I'm like, why the hell am I even telling people about how great I am at reading the New Yorker? But flex and a half, finished it online before it arrived. Wow. And I even said it to Millie and she was like, and I'm like that is the most annoying sentence. Finished the New Yorker before it arrived. Anyway,
I'm trying to bark.
This is why I can't slow down because then I realize how everything I say sucks. So there's this amazing article about the people who rebuild the cities after they've been devastated by climate change events.
Oh, wow. This is very different.
It's very different, but there's a lot of hope in it and it's fascinating.
Okay.
So if you think about the way that I love how it's just like, people, you're always just going to hear me talk about the climate crisis, probably until I die. And that's just the way this podcast is going to work.
Yeah.
So if you think about an event like a hurricane, the media does, it's there for it. We watch it. It's like, there's so much interest. And immediately that interest leaves when it ends.
Right.
But then there's this long process of
fixing
rebuilding and fixing. And just like this is a separate point, but just for people who economically are curious about the climate crisis and why it's so important, places like in Texas or New York City, like you guys who live there, you're all paying tax to hopefully like make your city a better place. But as climate change continues, a lot of your tax dollars are just going to keep going back to fixing.
To like recovering versus actually like progressing.
It's one of the reasons why when economists like to be like, we need oil for the economy. It's like, well, your economy is going to be devastated if you don't leave fossil fuels in the ground. Mm. That's one example. Anyways, so there's these people who like do this, and FEMA is the thing that people hear about. Like FEMA is going to give this much money. But what they do is they outsource their money to smaller companies, which then outsource their company to other smaller companies, which then becomes so unregulated that it's this horrible...
Or just so many layers that it can get like so confused and lost and wasted. And
essentially, it's a lack of regulation from the government. Fair. And so it's a really fascinating article about these specific companies, ServPro, Signal International, that will literally like go to places like Venezuela, promise people $30,000, great living conditions to come to New Orleans to help fix it. Mm-hmm. They arrive, horrible living conditions. They don't even pay them.
So they're exploiting like people from outside of America to come and fix it.
And then they don't even pay them. And when they start to complain, they call ICE.
Oh
and
my
deport
God.
Them. Yeah. Evil.
That
evil,
is so evil.
So evil. Okay. Oh, it's like these companies are so disgusting and we need to all like be thinking about this.
That's crazy.
But the hope is that there's like these, there's this incredible thing called resilienceforce.org, which everyone should go look into. And they're legally finding people, telling them, they say things like, take pictures of the license plates of the people who deny you your money, write down every single infraction.
To like track it and find it.
Yeah. So for example, one company in Michigan wanted to get a bunch of people from Florida, like new immigrants. Some of this is like another thing. This is an American issue where it's like people are like, they like deport them. It's like, well, actually the only people fixing your cities after are maybe people who aren't citizens. And therefore they're so vulnerable that they get taken advantage of by these companies. So anyways, they ship them essentially in these like from Florida to Michigan to fix after a flood. And it was during COVID and they all got COVID. And then when they started to get sick, they just were like, no, we don't want you anymore, and sent them back. No money, nothing. And they all had COVID. That's so it's like really legally up. And they were trying to say, they were told they'd get their own room. They were trying to like be like, this can't be right. Like these people have to pay for this. Like we've also lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it's resilienceforce.org. They're like suing these companies.
That's the group that's trying to fight against this.
Incredible lawyer. And he's like getting people together and it's starting to work. The fights legally are helping to create regulation. These companies are starting to become like shamed and having to try and fix it from the, sadly in America, if you do it from the bottom up. For the world, this is why it's so important to have governments regulating companies as we rebuild from climate change, and we don't offset it to private equity. And then that's when you get these like horrible, horrible, essentially like it's injustice and it's racially motivated.
Can you clarify for me? So this article was mostly looking at like America and the companies that do it there, or
solely
more broadly?
America, okay. But ServPro is actually a Canadian company that got so big that it's now in Canada and
like
America. And honestly, I was reading The Walrus, which is the Canadian version of The New Yorker.
You need to stop.
And they had, this is like, I want to barf in my own mic. But they had this crazy, you know, those fake articles that are like, they look like a real article, but then you read, it's like paid by TD.
Oh, yeah. Like sponsored posts.
Yeah. Sadly, like the Canadian journalism is so sad that like half The Walrus is like, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. TD Bank is really cool. Then I'm like, wait a second. This is like hidden ad. But they had a full hidden ad about this amazing company that rebuilds cities after climate change with all these gorgeous photos of people. Oh, and I thought to myself,
like,
holy
is that
crap.
A scam?
That's a, well, I don't know, but based on that,
right.
I maybe
is it like
second
propaganda?
Guess. Yeah. It felt like propaganda. I want to look into that company. That's something I'm going to do after this. Anyways, wow.
The world, it can be dark.
That could have maybe been its own episode. Like, we should maybe talk about I always just want to talk about climate change.
That's really fascinating. I want to learn more about that. Well, cool. Should we take a little break?
Did I talk so fast still?
No. You slowed down, I thought.
Okay.
You
did well,
I think, but
wow.
I'm
should
attuned
we just
to hearing you speak faster.
Do horse tranquilizers before each episode? Like some ketamine?
Yeah.
Let's just do ketamine.
Oh, is that what that is? I actually don't. I've never done that, by the way.
Okay, gay people, like do gay that. Friends will just be like, oh, I'm going to do horse tranquilizer tonight. And you're like, holy shit, being gay is insane. Okay, let's go.
Okay, well, we'll be back in a minute.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Study time.
Study time.
Study time.
Study time.
Glug, glug, glug.
We're getting hammered.
I just love a cold pint after a long day at work with the bros.
That's like such a real image, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like British culture. That guy goes to the pub, have a little pint after work.
It's even interesting thinking about like marketing for alcohol and how it is always about like being social and friendly and also like weirdly everyone's fit. You're like, you're consuming so much more when you drink. It's like not good for you.
I hated the movie The Star is Born. Yeah, I'm gay. Drag me. I know. It's weird.
A Star is Born?
A Star is Born.
I can't even get the name right.
Sorry. Lady Gaga. I didn't like it. Anyways. And one of the things that like made me laugh and I hated was he was supposed to be an alcoholic, right?
Oh, yeah.
So they'd put some blush on his face, like the
to look
Bradley
red.
Cooper. And then he'd turn around the shower, just the like, most ripped bod, like all this hair. And she's like, it's just so hard the way you drink. It's like, that is a physiological error. Like, this is an unbelievable movie. The premise of this movie is now debunked for me. Like, he's so hot
right,
and
it breaks the illusion of what his character should
it's like what and why
because you're like there are other actors who like go full in and let go and change their bodies and stuff
yeah
I was like maybe that should have happened a little more in that
fair some enough. Might say Gaga did for that role though wow what a transformation
so okay. We are talking about alcoholism obviously I want to be lighthearted and like be able to have fun but obviously that's like a very serious
thing. So alcoholism, this is the first thing we're gonna say, is that is an outdated term, and the reason why this could be not funny, this shouldn't be funny, but alcohol use disorder is now the way that a doctor or like academics will talk about what this is that we collectively are dealing with as a species. Okay. Ever since we enjoyed fermented fruit as monkeys many years ago. And so essentially, like a lot of addiction, your phone, everyone's addicted to their phone, sorry folks, but it's mostly a scale. Are you mild, moderate, or severely addicted to your phone? It's a better way to think about all addictions. And so that is what now it'll say that person had a mild case of alcohol use disorder. That person had a moderate case of alcohol use disorder. That person had a severe. The thing is, when you get to mild, it's interesting questions that I'm like we might have a mild alcohol use disorder, which is a fair, I think, important thing for lots of people to realize. And I'm going to ask you some of the questions.
Side note, though, can I ask you a question first? Yeah. When you think of the word scale, what scale do you think of first?
Oh, because of this, I'm thinking like I'm thinking of a sliding scale.
Wait, I mean like.
I don't know.
Put a word before it, like scale. Blank. It's like Richter scale.
Oh, I don't know. Oh my God, now I'm thinking. I don't know
that I said that a lot. I was just curious which came to your mind first, because I was like, why did Richter come to me first?
Oh,
but then a Kinsey. You know what I mean? Like, what would someone say?
You're blowing my mind with these white man's names. I just have to think of white men.
Or like,
Electromagnetic. Damn, wait, that's a spectrum.
Is Richter? You're right. Not a scale. I mean, is a scale a spectrum?
Okay. Well,
anyway, back to this.
Yeah, no, I totally thought it was going to be about this. That is insane.
No, just when you said scale, it made me think like Kinsey.
So I have a question for you.
Okay. When related to alcohol?
Yeah, this is one of the questions that you would have to do to find out in a medical sense if you had AUD, mild to severe.
Okay.
Okay. You have a hard time stopping drinking once you've started.
That's also on a scale for me. Like, okay, so what I would say is that for sure I know my limit, and I know I can easily stop when I'm getting near my limit. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's not been a time when I like, I don't know how to describe it, because I know that could someone with a problem could also say that, but I just feel like I kind of know roughly how many drinks I want to drink going into the night.
No,
and
you're
then I usually have around that amount, and then I'm like, oh, either it's been spread out and I'm not that drunk, so I'll have more, or I'm like, no, I've hit my limit, I'm going to stop.
Actually, knowing you, I think you might not have an alcohol use disorder. Like, I don't think you would actually, based on studying this, really fall.
Yeah, sorry, I do either.
Next question. Have you ever tried to cut back before them? And you couldn't?
No. I mean, like, I've tried to cut back and been like, or I'll just be like, I'm not going to drink this weekend, and then I won't. But sometimes it's more challenging, especially coming out of COVID, because it's like we're able to see friends more. So a weekend comes and I'm like, I don't really want to drink, but I probably will end up having some drinks this weekend.
So I think both you and I, like, have a pretty healthy relationship to alcohol, even from studying all of this stuff. But it's interesting. It's like, actually, I'm working on my marijuana too. I think I'm in an okay place right now. Right? Say it into the mic. I'm doing better.
Oh
right?
My God, he's holding a fucking knife.
I'm literally
to my
grabbing him like Katy Perry grabs that kid at that meet and greet.
Say it.
Say it. Gay rights. Right? Okay, anyways, moving on. So, anyways, okay, so to answer that question, I do think I can stop when I've started. But one thing I thought was interesting was the tried to cut back before and couldn't. Like, drinking is so something that I kind of feel like I have a handle on that. Like, this weekend we have a friend's birthday, the weekend before is Halloween. And there have been times where I'm like, I'm not going to drink for a month, and then I can't. Do you know what I mean?
Because that's kind of why I brought
can't
up
can't do it.
Seeing people, like, when during COVID, and this is not to say, like, at times I was going on a month of not drinking, but because it was so autonomous, because we would just spend the weekends just us, like, if I didn't feel like drinking, I would not.
Oh, yeah.
But then, like, now people are able to have weddings and stuff and birthday parties, and it almost feels like there's a social pressure, not even to do it, but to not be rude. Like, it's almost like, it's your birthday. I want to show you I want to have fun.
That's so true.
And so
you're showing them a good time.
Yeah, you want to bring the energy up and, like, have drink and not make them think that you think their party's lame or something, which is funny.
That's so interesting.
But what you said made me think of this, but I kind of forget now. It is, like, social aspects of it is why I would have a hard time actually sticking to stopping for a while.
So why I might say, just like for health and like even to understand, I think knowledge is power, and to not call it alcoholism anymore, to call it alcohol use disorder, for me it's like, I think compared to some other people who really don't drink that much, they just don't have lives with people who have these parties, would actually definitely not have an alcohol use disorder. And then because my life is so socially baked with drinking as like a white, like I'm like, I keep being British, but like, who knows? Like lots of white friends and like, there's just a lot of drinking in our culture that I think I might have a mild one because I've tried to cut back and not drink for months.
In that sense.
And never could.
Yeah. It's almost like a false excuse to be like, but it's because of the social events. It's like, there's people who can go to social events
who
and
don't
not drink.
Yeah. Or they're like, actually, I don't surround myself with people like that. And none of my friends drink.
Yeah.
Sometimes I meet people and they're just like, none of their friends drink. And I'm like,
well, I have a group of friends that doesn't drink.
Yeah, exactly. I think those are the friends where sometimes
I'm
like,
when I'm with them, I'm like, I don't want
to drink. And when I'm with them, I don't drink. And it's so fun. Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah.
But sometimes I am like, it's 11 and I'm like, I need to go to bed.
Yeah. And actually, it's like, it is really fun, but like, definitely people aren't doing insane shit that's also really fun. You know what I mean? But it's like a different type of fun.
Interestingly, like, some of the most fun I've had is with my friends when we were sober.
Exactly. And know what? Also, you don't have like the person who's like, oh, that's awkward. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're too drunk and now you're like, maybe making this not as fun.
You didn't answer those questions for yourself. So
I did.
The first two you did?
Yeah.
The first one, what was it?
I don't have a hard time stopping drinking when I started.
Oh, okay.
I can actually, like, I've learned how to do that. I think when I was younger, I couldn't.
But, okay, I would say, like, I don't disagree.
Oh, my God, okay.
No.
I've definitely got a mild one.
No, it's more like, I've actually really never thought like, I can't stop drinking, but you mix substances. Like, you'll, like, do an edible later, and I'm like,
and maybe a little bit of shrooms, and then... Yeah.
So I feel like sometimes you do push yourself. It's not very often, but, like, every now and then...
No, but we're not...
Like,
stop it. We're talking about alcohol today.
Okay. Fair. You don't push past your alcohol.
And I do feel like I can organize. What it is I'll be like, this is going to be a fun night. I'm going to drink this much, and I, like, can stop when I'm, like, actually...
You know,
like,
kind of where you're going to land.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think I just have a mild one because... can cut back. But moderate one is when you continue to drink even though you know it is negative to you, which is a kind of like a harder one to sort of answer. But it's like, even though it puts you in a negative emotional state, you continue to drink.
Yeah.
When it starts to, if you ever have like a friend or relative ever say anything to you that it's a problem, that's a question. It's like, has anyone ever said like to you that you've had a problem? And then you have to be honest, because it's like, even if in your opinion they're overreacting, you still have to say yes to it.
Yeah.
And it's like a sliding survey.
And with that, so that's like more significant if someone asks you.
It's based on numbers. So say you answer 2 out of 10, for example, then you'd have mild. If you have 4 out of 10. But when I was reading them, I'm like, some of these are like for severe, like if you answered this, they'd automatically put you as severe.
Okay.
Is like if you consistently are drinking and driving with people in the car. Like if you
that,
like you can't stop. That means you have a severe.
No, I didn't mean to have that reaction. I just like it is such a thing.
That's one of them. There's many other questions.
I've never, ever, literally ever driven a vehicle.
Okay, like, but that's because you don't have a severe alcohol. Yeah. You know what I mean? This is the point also of why this could be really sad, is that so many people do.
Yeah,
alcohol is so dangerous.
Yeah.
Like, it really is. Anyway, so now we know alcohol use disorder. I might have a mild one. I don't know. A doctor might say no. But you can go online right now and just write alcohol use disorder survey and find out for yourself
and
where you fall.
And see and evaluate. No, that's really important because I think any addiction, it is like they always say, like the first step is what, like admitting to yourself.
Oh, yeah. True.
And so to be able to even have objective tools that can help you see privately if you need to admit yourself. Because we live in a society where alcohol, especially of all drugs, is so common that I think a lot of people just assume I'm drinking the same amount as everyone else around me. And you probably build a bubble in a world where, you know, we probably think that. And then probably people we know who drink way more also think, well, everyone drinks about as much as I drink.
It's way more fun when you get in a group of people where they're drinking more and you're like, well, I'm healthy. It's not as fun when you get in the group of people who are like, oh, what, I drink like, you know, at Christmas only. I'm like, what?
Yeah. So, I forget where I was going with that.
Just tell me some of your stuff.
Okay, I just brought up some. I just like found a bunch of really interesting studies, but I thought I would just say like the top level of what they found.
Yeah.
So something I found interesting, there has been a drinking gap between men and women for a long time in terms of like men drink a lot more than women. But over the last 100 years, that gap has just like become smaller and smaller. And this is related to binge drinking and alcohol disorders. So not just like casual drinking. It used to be 3-1 male risky drinking behavior. And now it's almost 1-1 globally.
Wow.
So it's like men and women. And it's interesting because they said women over 26 are drinking a lot more. But the reason that gap is also becoming different is actually younger adults, like under 20, are drinking less overall, but boys are doing it at a bigger rate than women. So that's also decreasing the gap between men and women.
Wow. It's so interesting because it's like, oh, that's globally too, right?
That was globally, yeah.
It's also interesting because I'm like, it's obviously probably they're saying globally, but it's so crazy to think about like alcohol and culture. Like when we were in India and it was like hard to find alcohol, like I'm so curious about numbers there. I can see why in the West this is an issue, but also it's like alcohol is quote unquote a depressant, right? Like it increases GABA neurotransmitters in your brain, which are the inhibitory neurons, right? So it's like increasing inhibition. And I think a lot of people start because they get stressed. Like, I think that, like, it helps deal with stress physiologically.
It starts as fun. It makes you feel relaxed.
And then I'm like, no wonder women are drinking more because, like, they're it's like fucking stressful to be a woman. You know what I mean? I'm like, they were finally people were less sexist. They were like back in the day, men would be like, don't let the woman drink. And now they're like, oh, actually, sexism is common. You can drink more. Oh, you're stressed as F too? Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of interesting conversations. Remember when we had to do, like, insurance one time? They ask you all about, like, drugs, and marijuana is included as a drug that is, like, a problem. But alcohol is not.
Oh yeah,
because it's such a like boy man thing.
Yeah, they were like, all the boys, how many whiskeys you have at lunch? 3, that's good. But if you go to therapy, you have to be like $10,000 more.
Literally, they think you're sick if you go to therapy now. But obviously, hopefully, those kinds of things in the insurance industry are changing because it's actually way better if you go to therapy.
I love how we're so dumb. We're assuming the insurance industry's changing. It's like, all right, all those dudes are like, let's just keep the regulation and government out of here, and we're definitely not changing. They're all sipping whiskeys.
Yeah, fair. I guess I meant like insurance is ultimately meant, like therapy in particular, actually makes
people you better
and less likely to cost you money. So insurance industry is driven by what will save them money. And so I'm like, alcohol is poison and actually is so unhealthy for people. And therapy is really good for people.
Also, therapy is such a socioeconomic privilege. If someone's going to therapy, they're probably rich. If you're an insurance company, they're more stable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, therapy is such a sign of stability.
Of, like, money and affluence.
Because it's like, you have to be, like, rich enough to be like, I'm going to spend this much on this. It's all very important. BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a great place to go. I'm kidding. But it's like, anyways.
Yeah. Okay. Two other cool facts. Not cool, actually. No. I just was like searching for the
word. Kids drinking's not cool.
No, the next one is like half of adults with ADHD between 20 and 39 have a substance use disorder. And alcohol is the most common one. It was just, it was like a really interesting study and articles that were talking about like the importance of recognizing this. The sort of theory posited behind it is with ADHD, the younger you are, the more likely you're to engage in riskier behaviors when you're younger. And there's like a higher association with depression and anxiety that is not classified in ADHD people. And so I don't know, I just thought it was like, it's one of those things that's like a shocking
stat, but important to think about.
Yeah, honestly.
And then the last thing before I actually had one other study that maybe I'll bring up was, you know how like often people are like, a glass of wine a day is actually healthy for you? And there's been all sorts of...
That's like a pop science article that comes in at
Like red wine has tannins and antioxidants, and that's why it's so good.
Yeah.
There's always been pushback about like, well, actually, maybe it's because people... Because the thing is, people who are abstinent from alcohol actually have higher mortalities than people who drink a little bit.
So yeah, that's but all those types of studies always have such extraneous.
Yeah. So, well, one of the things they've always thought is like that if you're more affluent, you're more likely to drink, but also eating like maybe you have the ability to have a trainer and go to the gym and all those things.
Yeah,
but what this study had found was that actually people who abstain from alcohol, it's already skewed because a lot of those people are abstaining because of health problems. Or because they already were alcoholics, or I shouldn't say that word. They had like a substance abuse problem.
Severe alcohol use disorder.
Yeah. And so it's just like, that's what skews it. And ultimately it's like, the alcohol is not healthy for you is what the study is trying to be like. We're not finding the correlation.
Yeah, no, there. I've never, ever read, seen those headlines and never, ever fallen for that. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just sorry. Like, just with like general science.
Lots of people
degrees.
Think like in moderation, everything's healthy. And now this is being like,
but alcohol, there's no evidence for that. Like, there's no way. And I know why that article would go viral. And I know the biochemistry that you could justify through like the antioxidants of a red grape. But I'm sorry. The actual chemical of the alcohol in my head have always been like, has outweighed any sort of juice like sour substance. Like, it just doesn't make sense from a nutrition standpoint. But I get why it's like catchy. It's just like funny. It's like, of course it's bad. But they have to keep justifying.
I don't know why. Like, I, not that I don't agree, of course it's bad, but I see it as quite pervasive that people think you can have that it can be healthy.
The way that it's the way the popular article was written was they justify it because it actually does speed up your heart rate. When you drink one glass of red wine, that it speeds up your heart
rate.
So,
they
jumped
you.
Way too far by saying, well, it's good to speed up your heart rate like on a walk or a run. But it's actually like, okay, so A, first of all, speeding up your heart rate when you're not physically moving has a lot of like nutrition, like physics things I've read about where it's like that could be a really bad thing. That's also kind of like anxiety. That's like maybe the issue of our time. And that you can't just like make that leap. Also, you then are drinking alcohol, and our whole thing here is about how that could lead to you a disorder. Like, what a slippery slope always. One a day? It's like, of course it's going to be like, oh, two. Like, I'm sorry, that's obvious.
Like, there are so many counterbalances. Even if speeding up your heart was a little bit good, it's like, it literally destroys your sleep. Like, any amount of alcohol before bed breaks your sleeping patterns. And so even if you feel like it's putting you to sleep, and it's actually like a different form of like your brain doesn't go through REM or in deep sleep for the same amount of time. And it's like actually destroying those parts of your brain that's like regenerative. So yeah, it is like, especially, I mean, the book I read, Why We Sleep, had a whole section on like, we should party in the mornings because it at least gives your body the time to process. Not, this sounds like bad advice. God. Like,
pancake kegger, me, cake stand at 11,
I'm not saying this is like what I think people should do and not to encourage anyone who drinks in the morning. But it is like, then if you stopped, if it, instead of at night, it was like once in the morning, then you could metabolize it all.
It just means your sleep wouldn't be as effective.
Yeah, which to a lot of people is like,
important.
So that's where your brain and body like recover.
Yeah. If you didn't know, folks, sleep's about brain and body recovery.
Sleep's really important if you didn't know.
Also, alcohol, whenever you learn about it biophysiologically, I'm like, this is the most scary drug. Because it's like, you drink it, it like, well, 20% is absorbed in your stomach. So it gets absorbed pretty quick. It's a little bit like needle to the stomach. Actually, some people, there's some studies where that goes in the tongue a little bit.
Goes in the what?
You absorb like the littlest bit of alcohol on the tongue. The tequila
shot. Oh, and that goes
right into the bloodstream, babe. Straight to the brain.
Dangerous.
You know what I mean? Scary shit. Anyways, when alcohol gets to your brain, it's like there's the excitatory neuron, like glutamate, which I always am like, when you read science, I'm like, excitatory sounds kind of fun and good. And then it's like, then there's like the inhibitory neuron. And when you're reading science, you're like, sorry, like, it doesn't sound as good. And it's like, alcohol fucking goes ham on the inhibitory one and shuts off your excitatory one. I'm like, that's every other drug. Sorry. It's like the excitatory one goes ham. Right. It's like, well, that sounds fun.
For some reason, alcohol, it's literally like, depressed.
Yeah. And it's like, so why the hell? It's like, whenever I read about it, I'm like, this sounds like the most, like, worst drug.
Also,
and it's the most common, and it is the worst drug.
You know, the other part of it, it's like, have you smelled pure alcohol? Poison.
Poison.
Have you like, drank
that's
even
why
a
you're
shot?
Gagging.
It's like,
yeah, you're like, your body's like, no.
And everyone's like, can you do it? And they're all like, like, I mean, not to say, I guess you do that with a lemon too. That doesn't mean it's necessarily bad, but lemon smells good.
And there's no there's no lemon use disorders on the planet because people aren't doing it.
It's like, there's the opposite. It's called scurvy.
Yeah. Got
rid of that. But one. I just mean, like, it is interesting that on first sip, everyone knows, like, when you sip alcohol as a child, it's disgusting the first time you ever try it. That it's like, yeah, interesting that even a thing that biologically we think kind of smells disgusting,
and we think is good for us. Like, drag my dad slash like Scottish white men, because like we are like went to Scotland and tried Scotch, and it's like they're like, it takes 10 years to get into
yeah.
it. I'm like, what? And then they're like, okay, so you got to sniff from away so it doesn't burn your nostril. Then you got to get a little closer, and that's where you can kind of smell the chemical.
Oh my
like,
god!
Chemical. And then like, and then you taste it. I was like, this is disgusting. I'm gonna barf. I'm literally.
I can't believe how duped we've been.
Because they make you swish it in your mouth.
I know, and then they're literally like, it takes 10 years to like this. It's like, why
no,
would I ever choose
poison?
To-
yeah, like what, exactly. Like what, I. Like,
but now I'm like, I've been trying, like actually, and I'm like, why am I duped by
no,
this?
No, we didn't
system?
Try that hard.
No, but
we immediately made fun of it. Or
no,
I
but
did.
Even
I
now,
like, get
we,
a better hobby
we
than
didn't
that.
Didn't make fun of it. We bought it.
No, I know. Well, A, I bought one for my dad, and B, I bought
and
one
for us.
No,
being
what
like,
I picture,
we're gonna have a
no,
little bit.
What I picture is like this epic party night. We got home at 4:00,
and you're
wow.
like, here's the thing that we think is disgusting.
What? Let's do one. And it's like once a year we open it. That's what I picture. It's kind of what my dad
but
would
for
do
why one. That's what I'm saying. If you don't, if you have to get
oh,
10 years to get used to it,
to make that moment just a little more special. But I'm definitely gonna laugh and be like, this is disgusting. And like, it is disgusting. And
if it's gonna like hurt
that.
me, it's like, I'd rather be drinking blue Kool-Aid. Like, they're both just as bad for you, but that at least tastes amazing.
I would love if you were a connoisseur of blue Kool-Aid. We're like, so you start by observing
I'm
the blueness.
Not lying, blue Kool-Aid is one of the best drinks
it
on
really
this planet.
Is. And I actually am like, you could be a connoisseur. You're like, at this one, I'm actually going to do only half the carton of the Kool-Aid yeah. blue to get the lightest tinge.
And like, even the comparing like blue flavor, like slushies, I'm like,
yeah, I always
what
chose
is
blue.
This? Yeah.
It's like, they're like blueberry.
Yeah, but you're like, this isn't
no,
blueberry.
No, it's blueberry. This is like, actually like pure glucose. Like,
when you see the Kool-Aid package, it's like, all you get is this little thing. And then you have... You
when
have to
you put,
buy the sugar that is like actually
when
so
you
much
put
sugar.
The sugar in that. I remember as a kid, I was the first moment I was kind of like, "Yeah, mom, you're right. This is disgusting. We're gonna decrease the sugar on this recipe." Like, because my mom would always decrease the sugar on recipes because they were like healthy. She'd be like, "Craig, let's do it." And like, I honestly was always like, "Mom, more sugar." But the first
you saw
time
the Kool-Aid, you were
I
like,
had to do Kool-Aid, I was like dumping in the. I remember like dumping in the sugar, and I'd be like, "One more cup."
Okay.
And then I was like, "This is sick. Like, this isn't even gonna dissolve physically into."
It's like
substance.
Probably to the point where they're like any more and it
won't dissolve.
But
that's
I
wild.
Have to be honest, and I know we're really off topic, but
not really. It's also sugar use disorder.
Oh, true.
One.
Yeah. Okay. We should do an episode on that.
Writing it
like
down.
Just talking about sugar in general. But what was I going to say? Oh, you love baking, and sometimes when I have to bake or watch you bake, I do also feel that.
Yeah, totally.
Like Kool-Aid's the one thing that totally. Like, nothing else in my life do I put that much sugar in. Not that I haven't had
but
Kool-Aid in a long time.
But it's scarier when you're putting it in a quote-unquote
just a
juice.
Liquid that you can drink yeah. in literally 10 seconds.
It's scary. It's honestly
like,
scary.
I could chug blue Kool-Aid. I hope everyone knows what blue Kool-Aid is. Like, I'm sure there are other brands in other countries maybe, but I don't know what it is. I don't know if everyone else had that obsession. I probably haven't had it in like maybe a decade, and I still feel this strongly about blue Kool-Aid.
Yeah, and I honestly am like surprised we haven't. Like, that means we must have been that spooked by the sugar we saw. Like, why haven't we done it?
Yeah, because it also is like, why would I buy that? It's food coloring. If I have yeah. to provide like all the sugar,
that's
why
so
am I paying
true.
For this like essence of flavor? It's just sugar.
Okay, another thing about alcohol use disorder that I thought was weird was, not weird, I just sort of was like, dodged that bullet, quote unquote. You and I both definitely drank so much less in the pandemic. This might be why I think we're me mild.
Actually,
if not, we don't have one.
Think that was not true at the beginning.
Oh my God, you're right. It wasn't true at the
beginning. At
the beginning,
there
I
was like a kind
same.
Of mid part where I feel that we were like, not drinking, but we...
But
we
Mitch,
were doing Fridays.
Mitch, but I'm saying I think it became the same as what we were doing before. It never got more. What I'm saying is alcohol sales, according to Nielsen data. What I'm saying is, sign up podcast, I'm going to read you some stat. That the alcohol sales climbed by 54% per week in Canada and America starting March 21st, 2020.
Like right away.
Literal day of the lockdown orders.
I'm not lying. Maybe weird? We're experiencing this different. I think we drank more in the pandemic for like in the beginning. Because we were bored on the weekends. And not that we were drinking that much. I think we don't drink that
much.
But
don't you think when we go out, we drink so much more than we were? I remember thinking.
Maybe you're right. I think it's because you're being like, okay, yeah, we don't drink that much to begin with. When we do, though, it is like a binge. Like, it's like, have a big night out. Like, we don't really drink. I drink with dinner.
Yeah.
But I did find we would do that a lot more, which we never did.
Okay, and that would lead to more purchasing.
Yeah, and I feel like on the whole, like, if I go out at night, I'm pretty lightweight. I'm going to have, like, 6 drinks. But we would sometimes, over the course of the whole weekend, have more than that.
Oh, my God. I also kind of just figured out a complete flaw in the statistic.
What?
Okay. Stay-at-home orders. A lot of those drinks that we were drinking was at a bar. So it's like, of course alcohol sales went up because bars are now closed.
Yeah.
So you're like, we were purchasing our own alcohol from stores then
right.
to fill that Saturday night, which we would have been getting that alcohol at a bar.
Right.
Whoa. It's like,
but couldn't those.
This is Nielsen data of what was sold.
Oh, what was
You know what I mean?
Sold.
Oh, but
does
then
it not count
when
for
the bar
also,
buys it?
Yeah. And they're selling it. Like, maybe that's part of the
oh,
statistic.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Is that it was like.
Wow. Supply chain got there. You're right. If we go to the supply chain, it's still a bottle of rum.
But you might
coming
be
to
right.
Bar.
Look into that study.
Nielsen data. It was in Nature magazine. Oh, wow. I'm coming for Nature.
A letter to the
nature.
Editor.
But yeah,
Mother Nature.
Anyways, the sale of alcohol did increase.
Yeah. I had heard that as well. And actually, that's kind of the... A lot of people I've spoken to gave me that impression overall, that a lot of people did drink more, even if we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at home, maybe people were more aware of it, because you're right, I feel like when you go to a bar, even for, like, a dinner, you kind of, like, tuck those drinks away.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I just, on the whole, I feel like a lot of people were like, yeah, actually, it was a lot harder in the pandemic, and I did drink a lot more.
Hmm.
That's what I've heard.
So tell me about the impact on exercise.
Oh, yeah, you're looking over here. No, so my last thing, and the reason I brought it up, because I was, like, thinking, what are positive ways to think about this, tackle this, whether you have a mild, medium, high problem? And I came across a study on exercise. And as you know, what's going to probably happen is exercise, like, generally is good on things.
Yeah.
It's like what we keep learning.
So, yeah, like we keep learning it. We're just trying to mimic the way we were before, running the hell around, trying to get some food.
Yeah, but it's actually so annoying. To have to like be like, ugh, the exercise is actually the thing.
Especially
that's, like,
in our culture
so
now,
good.
Where it's like, I could just sit here and watch other people live their lives in a TV show.
So anyway, the study, you know, had the premise that like binge drinking is on the rise globally, especially in Western cultures.
Yeah.
So the biggest predictor for alcohol problems is having cravings for them for alcohol, which I guess like seems obvious in some ways, but that is like, if people crave it, you probably have an alcohol disorder.
Hmm.
And that is, cravings are impacted in general by stress and your mood. Cravings for anything, but in particular, they've found that like, the more stressed you are and the worse your mood, the more like you are to give into your cravings or get them. And so because exercise is known to reduce stress and improve your mood, this study was trying to see if there was a causal link between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So they took students who they diagnosed to have problems with alcohol and put them in 3 different groups. They had a control, a group that would get distracted by coloring. So that was like they're distracting. And the other one was an exercise group. And so
I love it.
But
so I love just thinking about the day when the like person comes in, like maybe they even have a lab coat on for some performance and they go, color here. And then you're just coloring like,
Yeah, seriously. But it's like, there's results.
Oh,
just
done. Do you want a butterfly next? And they're just like taking notes and you're like, what the fuck?
And you're like, this surely is the weirdest thing.
Yeah, like I'm clearly not in the one they're studying unless they're doing a study on coloring.
You never know.
Yeah.
No, I'm about to tell you some really cool results.
That's true.
So they, after these, obviously like tested them, established a bunch of like questionnaires that are about disordered consumption and stuff that are kind of known to be. So both exercise and coloring decreased stress and improved mood, but it was exercise that had the biggest impact
but still,
by a large
yeah,
margin.
True. Actually, Yeah, you should have been studying coloring. As someone who loves to paint, art therapy, my friends, it's real. But no, what's better than art therapy, I guess? Exercise.
Well, it was just their distinction between the two as well was that it's like, it's distractions can help us when we're bored or we don't have something to do. Like having stuff to do gives you a distraction. Crazy. But they realized it wasn't just the distraction. There's actually something about exercise that changes you.
This is also crazy, I will say, because I'm working on an episode about what happens when you stop drinking alcohol. And it's because people who have severe alcohol use disorders are constantly, quote unquote, depressing. Like inhibiting essentially is the right word. It's specific neurotransmitters, but it's a depressant. They're constantly making their whole brain neurophysiology, which changes as you drink. There's genetic adaptations, epigenetic adaptations that when you drink a lot, your whole brain changes. Mm-hmm. And so does your body. It's really sad. You don't look like Bradley Cooper. But it's like, essentially, when you stop drinking, because your neurons have been like constantly depressed, what happens is you go into such an excited state. That's why people who are alcoholics try and quit, they shake. But that's why you could get delirium tremens, which can kill you. It's such an excited state that your body's in. You don't have any control over your neurons. That's why people who are alcoholics, when they quit, if you don't do it with a professional or a medical professional with like medication or like weaning yourself off it, you will die. You can die. Mm-hmm. That is so scary.
Severe cases,
that's an example of something when people compare alcohol and marijuana. There's no case of that happening with marijuana yet. So it's just like alcohol is very dangerous. It's scary. But it's the excited state of your body that it can't control anymore. And then I think about exercise and I'm like, exercise is obviously like the thing you do if your body's like too excited. You know what I mean? I'm like, there's some link there where it's like,
I'm not sure I know exactly what you mean, but
like the issue with alcohol is that it's a depressant. Physiologically and neurochemically.
Yes.
And so therefore, the thing that you end up lacking when you drink too much is literally like the excitation, the glutamate, the things in your brain that like kind of like for some reason for me are like mixed with like exercise.
Yeah.
Like I sometimes crave exercise if I'm needing to deal with the excitatory neuron of my brain being too much.
But I don't see the connection between like how exercising then like
I just feel like in a way it's like exercise is the way I cope with that thing that like if you're trying to stop drinking, for example, and you start to shake, it would make so much sense to me to like start to exercise to deal with
it. Maybe it's like, that's interesting.
Now your body's in such a neurochemical excited state. Go go and like put that into some physical exercise. I'm curious what would happen. Like if you could.
Yeah, I don't know. Also medically, it's like when you're in a moment of like being in alcohol withdrawal, I don't think the thing there is to exercise.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like you're going to save yourself in the moment by going and exercising. Sure. And it's more like exercise about, like, has a long-term benefit outside of exercising is actually what this study was saying. But
I also think right now we're talking about severe alcohol use disorders. And then like now I'm like, let's go back to mild. Mm. Let's go back to you and I. Let's go back to someone even at moderate who's like, you're dealing with, maybe it's like not super, super severe, but you're all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I've been drinking so much, I had a bender and now my hands are shaking. Maybe I'm just like, go do push-ups.
I mean, you don't have to be shaking though.
But you know what I mean? I'm just like, there's something with my hand shaking that makes me want to run. That makes me want to
I can
like,
see the connection that maybe it's like, if you've depressed your neurology too
that's
much,
what I'm trying to say.
You should actually, I'm not thinking that your body's overexcited. It's more like you should excite it.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
You know what
true.
I mean? That the excitation would at least like counteract that like neuro, I don't know. But we're just making things.
This is all conjecture based on like biochemistry.
Just like thinking out loud and like we're personifying a chemical reaction that we actually don't know about.
All biochemical conjecture. I hope everyone knows that.
That's why I just wanted to be, we don't.
Yeah.
But anyway, either way, that exercising was beyond just doing it as a distraction had long-term benefits. So that is why exercise is often like such this cure, not cure, we shouldn't say cure, but like it's thrown around. It's like this thing that helps everything. And it's because it's not just a distraction, like it changes your body.
Yeah, for sure.
And that lasts not just right after you do it. It can impact you like over the course of years. It can change your whole brain.
Yeah, for sure. Exercise is just like, you're always going to hear on this podcast, mostly a net good.
But it is, let's quickly talk about why that's so annoying though. Because it is just like, I guess it's just actually really hard. And in the way our world is designed, exercise is not like, it's not that it's not encouraged. Lots of people do exercise, but it just feels like everything is so easy. Like we are it's so comfortable to sit.
Yeah.
It's so comfortable to just watch TV all the time and be on my computer all day for work. Like, our world is not designed for exercise being like, I think just naturally intertwined.
You kind of, for me, just answered your own question.
Yeah.
Is that the world isn't designed? You know what I mean? It's like, the world is not designed
it's
for
like,
that.
It's designed to give you everything you want. It's actually annoying to have to go somewhere for 1 hour to do exercise so that you can be healthy.
It's like,
versus a world where like people who have jobs where they can at least walk around on their feet are at least like getting that.
Yeah. No, I've like going to the gym is amazing. So embarrassing as a species. I've always thought this. It's like, we are meant to be literally physical all day long, but then now we pay money to go and run in on the spot. Like, if an alien came here, they'd be like, they're just running on the spot. Like, goddamn, like, you know, they're all a bunch of rats. Like, it's so weird to me. And it is cool, I think, in our show, streaming on YouTube, go watch right now, is like, it is like, that is all energy we should be harnessing. Like, it is true. Like, we should, like, someone should be advancing the technology of that.
So, like, we're
because it's like, we
bodies.
Are at least then we'd have a little bit of purpose at the gym. Right now, it's like, feels so sad to me because it's like, our culture is, and our whole world's been so robbed of physical activity that we have to do it like this way. Like, I sometimes get sad when I think about it. But
like, don't worry, the computers will figure out how to harness the energy from humans.
Whoa.
AKA, this is a promo for The Matrix 4.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I was like, well, I was literally The Matrix. Honestly, we like, let's just do another episode of an exercise. Let's just do it because that is so interesting to me.
We should do one on The Matrix too because I love The Matrix and I am excited, but also like so scared it's going to be so bad.
No, okay. When I saw the trailer, okay, I loved the first Matrix.
Yeah.
And to swear to God, no idea what was going on. It was just like,
in the first one?
It's so funny how everyone's like, even like, you saying the metaphor of the Matrix, like, I think I figured that out like 3 years ago. I'm not kidding. Like, I just like, what the Matrix was one of those movies that like,
also it's like not a metaphor. It's like,
sorry, the whole premise. I just was like, it was so cool that there was like the way they fought, but I was like, I don't know why they're fighting. I don't know what this pill means. Like, I just never was like, but when I found out what it was, I was like, first of all, this is sick. Like, when I found out the premise, I then really started to like the Matrix. But which is why I think 4 will be good, because the trailer for 4, when we watched in the theater before that movie recently, I was like, that was sick. And
out of all the trailers, it was one of the best ones.
So,
however,
second and third Matrix, I have to say, I was like, this bad.
So I'm gonna give you a little bit of a talking. So the same experience you had with number 1. On the surface, I understand why people like 2 and 3 less, because they are not, I think, as like succinct. They have some flaws in them. But when you kind of can get past the fact that they're like doing these battles and fightings, there's like some really interesting conversations about spirituality and about what it means to die and to have a purpose and to like be human. Yeah. And it is like, objectively, slightly worse movie, but in the same way that when you realized the metaphor of the first Matrix, it like makes it better.
You're right. And know what? In second and third, I also didn't know what's going on. When the machine started like, lasering everything, and I knew he like became like a crucifix like Jesus near the end. So at that point, I was like, oh, that's Jesus. I read that or something. Like, I was like, Jesus is here. And like, but when the machines were like those squid like things, I was like, you lost me, Wachowski sisters. Like, I was just like, this is not what I thought it was. But I also now think I've figured it out more, and I'm like, that is still cool.
I think this is something, and I know where this is a side note, okay? We are like so different in so many ways, and it's really interesting. And one of them is that I watch movies over and over and over, and you typically like to watch them once, and like that. If you, maybe if you love them, you'll watch
them. I would actually love to watch The Matrix again.
So what I was going to say, though, to my point, and I'm curious about your perspective on the other side. I don't want this to come off as like, the way I do it is better. But I love rewatching movies, for example, because I feel like I pull more and more meaning from them.
No, that's a really nice way of putting it. Now I'm like, I want to rewatch movies.
It's kind of like rereading a book, and then you can almost get more out of it. Or like even like Lord of the Rings. I understand why people wouldn't love it, but like the more you watch it, the more you like think about the themes that follow in the movie and like how that applies to your life.
Is like, I sometimes think.
I thought you were crying.
Imagine, I was like, that is so true. It's like, you see me so deeply, and I love it. And I'm struggling with that. I'm struggling with that. You know, I don't know, maybe 2 times. But actually, I'm struggling with that. Like, when you said that, I was like, God damn it, I want to watch Matrix. But anyway, I also think
you just need to be having a massage while you watch it.
Yeah, yeah. But I rewatched this movie Little Children recently because I was in like a film club, and then I was like, oh no, I was trying to write a screenplay.
Not Little Princess.
No, Little Children.
Amazing film.
Yeah, also, yeah, good. Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah, but you hadn't seen it until we were like old.
No, I know. And I probably should rewatch it. Okay, but like, I watched Little Children and like read the screenplay and I was like, this sucks. Like when I watched it, when it came
out. What is Little Children?
It's with Kate Winslet. Okay. And she, it's like a series of three stories. One's about a pedophile. Do you remember? I feel like we might've seen it. And Kate Winslet is like a mother and she like is having an affair with.
Okay. Him. I think yeah. I do remember, but it's yeah. so and long ago. Clocks, I don't really remember.
And there's like a lot of talk of like physics and like, honestly, I'm not kidding. Like, it meant so much to me when I saw it. It blew me away. I rewatched it. I was like, this is so bad and dated. And I was like, I think my thing about like wanting to know what's, I want to spend time watching what's right now. Cause I almost rely on it for like
you those
for
things.
What I think I need to know now. Mm. And it was like, and I don't know if this is like, right. this mm-hmm. could be complete BS, but I remember I had this weird thing with Little Children and the pedophile at the time. Cause I was like coming out and the way that he was treated sexually because he wanted children. I remember just
people like acted like that was what it was to be gay.
It was like such a dark movie and it just made me as like a newly coming out person, like feel something like crazy and dark and made me question so many things.
Right.
But now I've like figured out so many different things. I'm like, that's actually like a fucking weird connection. Like,
yeah,
but at the time I was young and I was like starkly sad about coming out or there was something there that now
that
I was like,
is an interesting thing. Like that is true. Sometimes the media we consume, it's like, is this an episode on alcohol? I'm sorry.
No, it's, we just have to wrap it
sometimes
up.
Sometimes like, the media we consume, like you are like 10 years older and you're like, oh yeah, that thing I really liked. Sometimes I go back and watch and I am like, I don't like it anymore. It's not funny or it's actually like weirdly sexist or something that it like Friends. Like you go back and you're like, oh my God. Okay. Yeah. Like I did really love that.
Yeah. But then I'm like, did I seriously laugh at some of these jokes? That's so sad.
Yeah. But then there are other parts that I'm like, are still funny, but I'm like, it's sucks that it's like, it's
no
literally
offense,
all
no offense everyone, but it's Lisa Kudrow.
But then what is amazing is when you can have a movie last for decades and it still is impactful.
Yeah. So it's kind of like you're rewatching and when they're amazing, it's so amazing.
Mm-hmm, cause you're like, wow, I can also connect to the young me who watched this and still these themes like come
I want to rewatch The Matrix.
We're going to.
Like we should watch it tonight. We would probably, you would definitely say yes to that.
I watched the first one on the plane. Like the other day.
And when cheaper we by the dozen. Okay, that's the show.
Oh my God, you just, you little.
Mitch,
I watched cheaper. Out. I chose Cheaper by the Dozen.
Cheaper by the Dozen is a pretty good movie. It actually is a pretty good movie. Okay.
It is great.
Peace.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.